how did you start thinking like this is the best business model? Like, had you tried stuff? Had you seen others do it? Like, because this is genius. Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I'm so excited to bring one of the leaders in the fields of personal growth that has built a platform that has published authors, has been able to impact millions of lives. And if you've been someone who has studied any program within the space of personal growth, you would have been made very, very conscious of the platform Sounds True. And we have the one behind the platform. Tammy Simon is joining us and, of course, has started that journey back at the age of 22 with a dream and a tape recorder. And today, they are an independent media publishing company that has embraced the world's most spiritual traditions, new age spirituality, arts, humanities, traditions, and has the best authors that are sharing their message on this platform. And as such, we're going to go and dive. What was the journey into creating such an influential platform in an industry that was growing, and how have they stayed modern in today's time, and what does the future hold as well? I'm so excited to dive into the lessons and discovering more with Tammy. Tammy, welcome to the platform.
Thank you, Jason. Great to be with you.
I really love that line that was shared around 22 years old, a dream, and a tape recorder. And so I want to go back in history. Can you paint us a picture of what was happening around you at that time that got you inspired about wanting to create a platform? And I'm assuming at that time you weren't sure that you were about to create a leading platform, but there was definitely an itch that got you to say, we need to create something that changes something.
Yeah, there was what was going on around me, and then there was what was going on within me. And really what was going on in me was the strongest voice and the strongest input that I was attending to, which was a real sense of, I'll just name it the way it was, desperation as a young person to somehow make a contribution, to somehow fit, to somehow express my voice, to be of service, to somehow be part of the world. I dropped out of college. I went to India, Sri Lanka, and Nepal for a year. I'd learned the study of meditation. And when I was in Asia, I actually gave my whole life. I laid down, arms stretched out in front of me in a full prayer position, on the ground at temples across India, saying how I wanted to give my life to bring that divine, infinite access that I had discovered through meditation to as many people as possible. But I didn't know how to do it. I had no idea how to do it. And when I came back, my parents said, could you please just get a degree? Please, God willing, just get your degree. But I couldn't. It wasn't real for me. It wasn't aligned for me. I mean, I'll just be honest with you, Jason. When I came back, I said to the head of the religion department at Swarthmore College, maybe I could do some kind of independent study and I could go live with religious cults in America and write about my experience doing their practices and how it impacted me. And he said, you don't belong at Swarthmore College. And I was like, you're right. I knew that. I don't belong at Swarthmore College. Anyway, long story, I made my way out to Boulder. And I was interested in understanding meditation and psychology at Naropa University, the first accredited Buddhist university in the world. But when I got out to Boulder and started classes, I just didn't want to be in school anymore. So I started waitressing, but here's the key. I also volunteered at Boulder County Community Radio, KGNU 88.5, to host an interview show called Live from Planet Earth, where I was interviewing spiritual teachers. And this is way before the word podcast was part of our lexicon. I wanted to interview spiritual teachers because I wanted to continue my education, the education I couldn't get in an academic setting, but I wanted to understand what happened to me when I started meditating? How could I integrate those experiences? How could I work with my own nervous system and my body and be grounded and effective and expanded, open and spacious all at the same time? So one of the people I was interviewing turned out to be a very successful Boulder entrepreneur. And in the course of our discussions preparing for the interview, which was not about entrepreneurship, it was about these huge 3-foot, 2-foot tall crystals that he had in his window, along with a yin yang symbol with a dollar sign in the center that said Transicon, transformational economy. And I was like, what are you doing with this yin yang symbol and the dollar sign? What are you doing with these crystals? And I said to him, here's the thing. I've inherited a small amount of money, which I had inherited, and now we're going back 39 years ago, $50,000 in today's terms, that might be like $200,000. So for me at that age, it was a lot of money. And I said, I don't know what to do with this money. And he said, why don't you put it into yourself? Now you have to remember, I'm waitressing and volunteering at the radio station. And I said to him, I have no idea what me and myself could do with this money. And he said, Tammy, you know what you want to do. Come back in 3 days and we'll talk about it. And just very briefly, I walked out of his office and I started feeling like I was walking a little bit above the ground, like 2 or 3 feet above the ground. And I was like, wow, this is really weird. What's going on? I'm feeling very strange right now. This is really strange. And, you know, that meeting with him must have really impacted me. And then I heard a voice and it was 3 words. Disseminate spiritual wisdom. And I knew that's what I was going to do.
Wow. Okay. There's a few things we need to unpack from that, but amazing that you had a series of events that led you to that point that gave you that level of clarity. And most people are not able to get that level of clarity in a message and be at a position where they're like, oh, I can respond to that kind of message, because there's a lot of messages coming from all over the place right now. And I don't think we slow down to the pace of the exercise that you've done. I mean, you've had a chance to travel. It sounds like you were quite tuned into, you know, listening, but today it seems like we're just really having a ton of messages being shouted at us. And I don't know if the voice really comes from within, as you spoke, it was quite loud. So in today's world, do you see it being a little more difficult to be able to pay attention to what our calling could be?
Well, 2 things. One, I don't want to over-romanticize it. I said that it came from a place of desperation. So I had suffered for many months. I had been suffering. I had been hearing all kinds. Maybe you could do this. Maybe you could be a drummer in a girl's, you know, rock band. I mean, crazy stuff, you know? So I had been all over the place. And I had decided to commit to a prayer. And my prayer was, God, I am willing to do your work. Please show me what it is. So I was repeating this again and again and again. And in a way, you could say I was plowing the field. I was creating this field of receptivity. Now, the second thing was I was reading a very interesting book by Eugene Gendlin called Focusing. And in the book Focusing, it talks about how you pay attention to the felt sense, to body sensations. So I was used to kind of scanning my body for different sensations and the intelligence and wisdom that would come from the body. So I want to put that in context. Now, in terms of your question today, is it harder? You know, look, we need quiet. We need time with ourselves. We need to do this kind of quote unquote focusing where we're paying attention inwardly. Is it harder today? Probably, because this was back in 1985, pre-internet. So I wasn't on my phone for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. So I had more time to pay attention to this inward focus. I would also say, though, to counter that and to give an argument on the other side, I believe that the wisdom intelligent forces are speaking louder today than ever to us, to each of us, because of the level of imperative, because of the demand of our time, because the situation that's happening within our species, where there's so much risk, I would say, of mass destruction. So on the one hand, On the one hand, is there more noise? Yes. Are the voices internal voices, voices of guidance from multidimensional intelligences? Are they louder? And is the need more? Yes. Does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. Only one thing matters, which is the deep sincerity of the listener's heart, your heart. Do you actually want to hear guidance? Are you willing to follow it when it comes? Is that real for you? Will you make sacrifices and, in fact, give up everything, including what you thought you were going to do, whether or not other people approve of it? It's not going to be guaranteed. All of that, that's what matters. And it mattered then, and it matters today.
I was going to ask about how, and this touches a bit of some of the things that frustrate me in some of the field, particularly in the marketing and sales field. I speak about selling with love, and that means you have high levels of integrity and you actually care for the clients. I've noticed that there are some, call it bad players in the field, will be able to get people to rally towards listening to them, follow them, and it's maybe in a more of a self-serving type of direction. And as we're trying to listen to a voice, I've seen people cling on to someone, giving them a sense of security and guidance, which might not be in their best interest, and kind of ignore themselves in the process. Because if we're just trying to find a guidance or a voice that's going to guide us, and somebody claims to have the magic sauce or the snake oil, we could even say, that it becomes a very tempting fruit. And so the question I would ask in your experience is, do you have a way of being able to discern the information that's coming your way that could be from your divine guidance as opposed to somebody who might have the tools to use, call it the arts of psychology, to persuade you into a direction that might not be in your best interest?
Sure. Well, the company I founded is called Sounds True. How do we know what sounds true? How do we know? I actually believe that when we're deeply inhabiting our body and our heart and a sense of inner alignment, which means an energetic flow that runs in front of the spine, we have this receptive discernment capacity to smell bullshit. We all do. We all do. And we even know when we're giving our power to someone. We even know it. We can sense it. And we know it's coming from some kind of deficiency or deficit or sense of emptiness inside of us. And what I would say to anybody is, look, there are bad actors in every field, people engaged in the art of persuasion, bullshit artists, in every field, every single field. It's more painful and in some ways and tragic when it comes to something as holy as spiritual wisdom, but you find it everywhere. The number one commitment I've made to myself is not looking outside and criticizing this, that, and the other. You can do that all day long and not make many steps forward. The commitment I've made to myself is, who am I going to be? What kind of presenter and speaker and, in certain situations, leader, in certain situations, follower? What kind of conversationalist? What kind of discerning person am I going to be? So that's the number one thing, because I have control over that. And that's what really matters. And then secondly, even if 1,000 people out there in the world say, go left, but I know in my heart that I am called to go right, I'm going right. I'm going right. If I know that. That's what makes someone actually, in many ways, the person who questions the status quo and look where the status quo has taken us. And that makes someone an innovator and a creator of the future.
I can feel like today's, like you mentioned, there's a lot of forces that are screaming into making sure that we're pivoting, changing direction, doing better than the trajectory so far. But I'm also seeing that there's a trend that anybody who's trying to bring maybe a different kind of truth, something that is in alignment with sounds true and feels aligned, are labeled as controversial and oftentimes are followed with controversy And it seems like there's also some forces that are trying to silence anybody who steps out and goes against the grain. So a certain kind of resilience or expectancy around that, should that be developed? And is that to be expected?
Well, of course. Of course. You're going to be criticized. You know, in my own journey, in the beginning, I was very comfortable wearing a pair of headphones, sitting in the back of the room, working all day in front of a computer and editing. I was behind the scenes. And I was like, I'm going to let all the authors, let them get out front, take the criticism, take the bullet, so to speak. Not me. I'm back here. I've just got my headphones on and, you know, I'm still 100% being a person of service, but they're out front. And I realized at a certain point that it was like, I mean, this is a kind of terrible metaphor, but it's how it felt. It's like I was wearing a bathing suit that was too small. And meaning I was just like, I was bursting out of the clothing that I was wearing. I had to be willing to take a bigger form. And it was really terrifying for me, really terrifying. And I remember working with a mentor who said, look, Tammy, people aren't coming after you and killing you, because I had past life fears, I had all kinds, they're just criticizing you. Like, you can handle that. You can handle some bad comments that, you know, and I've gotten all kinds, mostly about how, you know, oh my God, you're not dyeing your hair, as if that's the most interesting thing to talk about, or your voice sounds like you're an undertaker, or, you know, just all kinds of things that people can say, or, you know, this or that about the privilege I've had in my life, that I started my business with money I inherited, and, you know, et cetera. And just comments that hurt. And then I thought to myself, okay, what is it, is that everything comes with a price and a tax? Everything, everything you do. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you can see with your work, how much do you have to give blood, sweat, and tears? Think about a relationship that you value, or, you know, anything. Anything comes, it asks and exacts so much from us. So in order to come forward and wear the clothing that fits me, bring my voice and creativity and feel expressed and derive the fulfillment that comes from living an expressed life, I have to be willing to be criticized. Okay.
And then you're so anchored to the mission, you just keep going forward.
And the reward is bigger than the tax.
Well, interestingly enough that you use the term tax, because a tax will always be a fraction of the whole, not bigger than the whole.
Exactly. And the reward, it's both contributing and being of service and seeing the impact that it has on other people, but it's also something about the soul level expression and soul level fulfillment. And the sense of, you know, if I were an athlete, I left it all on the court. And I think for many of us, that's how I feel as a person. I want to leave it all on the court. That's how I want to play. And there you go. And you're not going to win every game. And once again, using the athlete metaphor, I think being an athlete in business, I relate to that, because business is muscular. It requires a lot. You take a lot of risks. It doesn't always work out. It has the quality of being with other people and a sense of play. And yet what's so amazing is that there is a deeper purpose also behind our athletic work. Amazing. That's the reward.
Something I found interesting in the field of spirituality is we talk often about how, you know, the world is abundant and, you know, we're all on a mission to, say, raise consciousness. But as we play the game of business, just like a competitive athlete, it is competitive and there are different markets and different competitors, and they're all going for some market share. And I'd be curious to know, have you found a way to reconcile the fact that in business, there's a competition with winners and losers, but we're all working towards the same mission?
Yeah. I mean, have you seen, once again, you know, obviously I like sports, at the end of a tournament, the way the players on opposing teams will congratulate each other? and how that always just like hits you. I'll speak for myself. That hits me right in the heart when I see people who are on opposing teams at the end of the game just hug each other, shake each other's hands, whatever it is, and mean it, and mean it. And, you know, I think there's also, I think, and this is interesting, powerful ways that we can collaborate together. And that's also amazing. It's like, yeah, this may be an area in which we're not collaborating, and then this is an area where we are collaborating. Let's share information, et cetera. And to always stay open to that, and mostly to have a sense of respect. Like, I respect you. I know how hard it is to create a company. I respect what you're doing out there.
I like that. I like that a lot. Tammy, I'm going to take us back because we're dropping nuggets of wisdom, but I want to also get some travel through time. And I want to go back to where we left off the story, which is you've walked out of that conversation with this entrepreneur and you have a sense of a download that came to you and tell you, okay, this is the direction I'm going for. And I think there's a lot of us that, you know, at some point we might spend some time, we might get a bit of a nudge about doing something exciting. And I'd be curious to know what were some of the first actions you took back then that nudged you into the path that you are now on?
Sure. Well, I'll just take us right back to that sidewalk. And so instead of walking 3 feet above after I heard disseminate spiritual wisdom, my feet hit the ground and I started thinking about it. And so that's a different quality of mind. I started, and I thought, well, you know, I could go into books, but oh no, you know, there's already book publishing companies and to college, the books were, you know, 500 pages, 1,000 pages. I don't want to be, okay, I could go into video. No, you know, my parents, they watched so much television. It was so deadening, you know, having dinner on a TV tray, whatever. I don't want to go into video. Audio. Oh, I already have a radio show. People already like my little Live from Planet Earth interview program. And each week I have a dubbing deck, and I just hit, you know, double time, make a copy, and I sell 4 or 5 copies a week. Smallest cottage business anyone ever had. $10 each, $40, $50 a week of my little interview show on cassette. And I had seen that there was such a thing as high-speed cassette duplicating equipment. And I was like, that's amazing. You can go to a conference and you can see them, you know, they chain together 6, 7 machines and you can make 15 copies in 3 minutes, something like that. And I thought, well, this is great. I'm going to start with audio. I already have my home dubbing deck. Now I'm going to buy these other decks. I'm going to go out. I'm going to record these workshops. I want to be at these workshops anyway. And I love being there, as I mentioned to you, Jason, in the back of the room with headphones on. I didn't have to pay. I made a deal with the author. Once I cover my costs of being here over the weekend, I'll give you a portion of the revenue I take in from selling the cassettes. I'll also give you this professional recording submaster that I've created. And then I collected on a wall all of the cassette masters. So at that point in time, it was now we're fast forwarding, doing time travel together, like 3 years, 1988. And I had maybe, I don't know, maybe 300 little cassette masters labeled on a wall. And I met someone who had developed catalogs. And I brought him into the office and I said, look at all these masters. And he said, Tammy, you're sitting on a gold mine. And I said, that's not a gold mine. It's a bunch of unedited cassette masters. And he said, we have to treat each one as if it was a standalone information program. Nothing else is required, just this program. And I'll develop the catalog for it. And this will be a catalog of audio learning for people who have never had a catalog like that. And I was like, look, if you're going to develop the catalog and you're going to put a little cover on each one of these, I want to edit them properly because I'd learned to edit in public radio. And so I was like, I want to edit each program so that it fits the beautiful cover you're going to make. So there aren't like weird bathroom breaks or beeping sounds or God knows what. And so I started editing the programs. He developed the catalog and that's how we got Sounds True off the ground.
That's so cool. For some reason, I'm thinking about that like documentary with Steve Jobs when they're like in the garage making their first personal computers. But in this space, you seem to have been the pioneer doing it for that area. I want to go back to a specific story. Who was one of the first seminars you went to, and how did you pitch it to the author to let you come in for free to record their event?
Sure. Well, here's a good example would be Ram Dass. And it's Ram Dass speaking in front of 2,000 people in an auditorium in Denver. And we have a little pink sheet of paper that has on it, had to be pink. No, just kidding. It just happened to be pink. It had on it other things we had recently recorded. And then it had an 800 number and a little order form you could tear off, and you could get a copy of the program you just heard. You could wait in line. And there we were, me and my elves making copies. If you didn't want to, we'd ship it to you for free, no shipping charge. And it was like 15 bucks or something. And we'd walk away. First of all, about 100 people would wait in line, and we would get them, you know, their copy. So we walked away with, you know, $1,500, $2,000. We'd get a bunch in the mail afterwards, and people just threw the form at us with 15 bucks and said, ship it to me. And so we would go home, we'd fill all these orders. We started developing our now what's called snail mail list, but it was our mailing list. And just like people value their email names, this was our, you know, minted our mailing list that we sent the catalog to in time. And so that's an example. And before you know it, we had an archive of Ram Dass recordings, which we continue to sell to this day.
That's so cool. You were in the grind. You were getting this off the ground. You're showing up at these events.
I was carrying those cassette duplicators. I remember when my mom saw the business I was in, she was like, that's very bad for your back, you know? And I was like, look, I have to carry these machines. Who else is going to carry them, you know?
And when you went to Ram Dass, and like, how did you reach him to be like, hey, we're going to come and record and start doing, is it like sales at the back of the room?
Well, remember when I mentioned that I had this interview show on Community Public Radio, I would call a couple months, I'd see the ad, and I'd call the organizer, and I'd say, hey, you know, I can get Ram Dass on the show in advance and help you promote what you're doing and sell all your tickets. But I also want to let you know of this service that I've got. And let me tell you about Sounds True's on-site cassette duplication service. And it doesn't cost you anything and you get a portion of the revenue. Yay!
That's genius. How did you start thinking like this is the best business model? Like, had you tried stuff? Had you seen others do it? Like, because this is genius.
You know, honestly, it was more serendipity than genius. You know, I know your show is called Selling with Love, and there's nothing wrong with the word selling. It's just a word. But the word that I like more is maybe something like letting ourselves be led by our love. And so something like that, like letting ourselves be led by our love is contagious. Before you know it, we're selling with love, persuading with love, magnetizing with love, living with love. So I loved learning. I wanted to learn from Ram Dass because I wanted to understand what the heck happened to me when I went to India, Sri Lanka, Nepal, started meditating, and ended up not speaking practically for 5 months upon my return. I had been so deeply rewired by that experience. I really wanted to understand how timelessness was going to meet and express through me in time. So I was turned on inside, passionate about learning. That's how I got in touch with Ram Dass. That's why the show was good, because I was really into it, really interested, really genuine. Then I had this money and I realized I wanted to use this money to be of service and make more money because I needed to pay my rent. So, okay, fine. Like, okay, what do I want to do? I want to go to these events anyway. I want to be there. And then I just remembered this flash, this image of seeing this high-speed duplicating equipment. And just being like, wow, that's so interesting. Who would have thought you could duplicate a cassette like that? 15 of them in 3 minutes. And then for whatever reason, I had this thought that it was a tool of the revolution, if you will. You could fit a cassette in your back pocket. It's just a cassette. But what could it contain? It could contain so much incendiary spiritual teachings that you would go on fire when you heard it. It could be that powerful. So all of that kind of just fit the pieces together.
Sounds like you like had the printing press moment for audio right at the right time with the right messages. It's so cool to go back into that initial journey. And then you've already covered this, but like you found a business partner. This became a business partner where you started doing the catalogs, right?
This gentleman who developed the catalogs was like, how much can you pay me? And at the time I was like, $10,000 a year. And he's like, well, that's not really enough. And I was like, well, that's all I can pay you. And he's like, what about some kind of sweat equity arrangement? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And he became a 20% partner in Sounds True. And 15 years after we worked together, he wanted us to sell the company. He was like, we grew it to the level we could. It was doing about $10 million in revenue at the time. But that wasn't the vision I had. And even though it was hard, and it has been hard, to learn as a creative the skills that it takes to be an executive running, growing a company, I also felt like I could learn and I wanted to. So I bought out his shares over time.
Okay. That's kind of where I wanted to take this, is because you started with this passion around the personal growth and the transformational spiritual messages. And this is what really got Sounds True off the ground. And at some point you had to switch those hats. And I'd be curious to know, how was the journey for you when you started realizing that you have to be working on the business and there was a lot of business functions that needed to be put in place and your role must have evolved so much over the years. How was that for you?
Sure. Well, you know, I mentioned that I carried the cassette duplicators. I didn't like it particularly, but I did it. There are so many things that I have done. Simply, it makes me, in a way, it makes me think like a parent. You know what I mean? Like if you ask a parent, well, how did you feel about doing XYZ for your kid? It's kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, now I know this is not the technical business answer. I'm speaking to you from my heart. It felt like I did what needed to be done as I was able to afford more and more and more professional leadership, professional management, chief technology officer, a chief marketing officer, chief operating officer. As we were able to afford more and more high-level positions, thank goodness I was able to move from the person who could kind of keep it together to a professional who could help lead and grow the company, you know, and so that's how we've been able to keep growing over these 39 years.
That's beautiful. And no, that is the technical, spiritual, and heart-oriented answer I was looking for, because I think, and sometimes you're like, well, I only want to do what is the thing that is close to my passion, or I want to do the thing that only inspires me, but there's some necessities that have to be done. And you know, the whole reason why I speak about selling with love is sales often finds itself to be in one of those categories that people dread it. People find that it is a distraction to the core thing they do want to do, or in that they want to make the impact, but the sale feels to be in the way. And I'd be curious to know about your relationship with sales. I know you said the word itself, although it's neutral, often gets substituted, but did you have a comfort with sale? Is it something you had to develop?
I had an aha moment, Jason, and I'm going to share it with you. So my aha moment is that I was the content person. You know, I was a religious studies major and I worked with the authors. I made everything gorgeous. And then we passed this program over to our marketing and sales team. And it was their job to do the marketing and sales. And I was sort of allergic to that. And that's the way it was, it Sounds True, for a long time. And then I would see the copy that would be written about the program. And I'd be like, that's not very good. That doesn't really actually say the truth of what the program. And they would be like, okay, what do you want it to say? And I'd tell them and they would try. And I'm like, let me just write it. Okay. Let me just write it myself. And then I'd write it and it would get much better. But I still was a little uncomfortable with it. And then I worked with a mentor And the mentor said to me, you know, Tammy, this is your opportunity to educate people. You're an educator. Why not educate them even if they never buy the product? This is Europe. And I could see that we would do, you know, in the digital marketing world, some kind of opt-in where we would get 100,000 people to opt in and maybe 1,500 or 2,000, 3,000 maybe, whatever, would make a purchase. 97,000 other people saw all the ads, saw the promotional video, saw all the sales material, saw the podcasts that I created talking about it, saw the letters, all of that. And I was like, 97,000, I can educate, and I'm mixing my metaphors here, but I can play all my aces. I can tell the best wisdom I got from each one of these programs in all of these marketing materials. I can impact and affect so many people, even if they never buy. This is my job as the chief educator and voice of the company. And I started getting really excited about it. And I started being, I'm not selling, I'm just communicating the same passion I put into the product, I'm going to put into absolutely every touch point leading to the product purchase. So that was my aha. And it totally changed the whole thing. And I took over being, you could say, chief educator, you could say chief salesperson for the company. And I feel good about it. That's my job, to lift consciousness. And I get to do it for free, whether people buy or not.
And surprise, surprise, it works.
Well, exactly. You're not putting the brilliant, passionate languaging behind the paywall. Bring it out front. Give it away. Put it out there. Give everybody a real taste. I feel in a way like I'm walking around, once again, introducing another metaphor, but like I have a silver tray filled with appetizer portions, and I want everyone to take a bite. You want two bites? You want three bites? Great. Let's go.
Tammy, you are oozing of the essence of what I'm trying to distill on my show. It's such a pleasure to have you here. And with the success that you've built with Sounds True and sharing these nuggets of wisdom that, to be honest, I've mentioned, but you have tangibly applied it into something that has been a successful business that's been around for decades. And for all the listeners who are having this kind of hesitancy around sales, to realize that if you are a content person and you can integrate that in the way that you sell and market in a beautiful way, and it does work, it creates success. We can no longer use that as the crutch that holds us back. Because oftentimes it's easy to call sales the reason why you're not successful. Oh, I'm just not good at sales and that's why I'm not successful. But at the same time, you can take your content passion and realize that that is some of the most effective ways to sell as well. And so I love that you are a walking testament to exactly what I am trying to distill to the world. And what you've been doing with Sounds True and the projects that you're working on now is just so amazing and refreshing to see, which kind of brings me to our time travel. I want to come to present time. You're talking about the internal MBA. You're working with people through 9 months and helping them really get in touch with themselves. And I'd love for you to tell me more about that. Like, what is the passion projects you're working on now that's got you most excited?
Sure. Well, you made this really interesting comment. You said at a certain point you realized you had to work on the company, not just in the company. And I did see that. And I saw that the interesting thing is that people grow and change at work. It is a soul crucible. And we can design our businesses and we can design the way we spend our time at work to actually make the most of it. Sometimes I think of it as doing double time. I'm working and putting out these ideas that I care about, but I'm also investing in my own soul's development. Am I managing my nervous system? How? One of the people who teaches in the Inner MBA teaches at the Peter F. Drucker School of Management, and he quotes Peter F. Drucker, who says, before you can manage anybody else, you better get really good at learning to manage yourself. So what are the keys to actual self-management? And there's a lot of deep work in that has to do with understanding how we impact other people in a group, how to bring out the best in other people in the group. So the Inner MBA is a 9-month online training program that Sounds True's developed in partnership with LinkedIn and also Wisdom 2.0, which is an organization at the forefront of bringing together presenters in social change, technology, and inner wisdom. And so we're interviewing CEOs, we're bringing conscious business trainers into the program. We have a whole module, you'll like it. The mentor who helped me have my aha, it's on conscious marketing, but we also have innovation for the future. We have a special entrepreneur in residence, Melissa Bernstein, who started the Melissa and Doug Toy Company. And we're looking at how business is a place for us to grow and give our gifts, and how in the future, this will be a wave of contribution that will be pouring out of the businesses of the future, because these are the kinds of companies people will want to start and will want to work for. And so it's a 9-month training program. We're moving into our 5th cohort. We only run the program once each year, and it starts in September.
Very cool. Very cool. Tammy, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you come on my platform. How does it feel to be the one interviewed as opposed to interviewing everyone else?
Oh, it's so much easier.
I know.
It's so much easier. It's a cakewalk.
I know.
It's like tap dancing. It's just fun.
I'm glad I was able to create the stage for you to dance, because it's a beautiful dance. I'm so excited. To be honest, I've been, you know me, I've worked in Mindvalley, and I haven't been as exposed to Sounds True, but just by having a chance to discover who you are and what you stand for makes me so curious about Sounds True to discover more and to dig deeper. And I think for everybody else listening, I'm hoping you're going to go and check out the Inner MBA. We'll put a link in the show notes if that seems to resonate with you. By the time you listen to this show, this might still be time to enroll. And there's also Sounds True One. There's some membership platforms and more content that you can discover some of the best spiritual personal growth learnings. If you see how it resonates with what you've heard today, I definitely encourage you to go check out so much more on that platform. And Tammy, I'll ask you one final question. It's one I have to ask every guest that does come on the show. What does selling with love mean to you?
Good question. Expressing my love. Just that, expressing my love. I'm not trying to close the sale. That's not who I am. I just want to express my love in every interaction, and the ripple effects that come from that are amazing.
Tammy, you've been an incredible guest on the show. Thank you so much for your time. For everybody else tuning in, make sure you go out there and express your love as well. The world needs your voice, and so go out there and make it a beautiful thing. Thank you so much.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.